Hey, everybody. Welcome to True Crime Predators with your host, me, Kathy Cassidy. I am a forensic therapist, and today's podcast is definitely one that I was not planning, but I think could be something of interest to the listeners. So this one is for anyone interested in pursuing a career in forensic psychology and those who are just curious about it. So today I was getting ready for an interview within corrections. It was for a jail that's, you know, in a county near where I live. And while I was getting ready, like, everything kind of came back to me from my very first job in corrections. And I was like, make sure you don't wear this. Make sure you do this. Don't do that. And I was like, wow, there's a lot of stuff. They're little things, but I thought that I would share with you guys, because I would have loved if someone told me some of this before I started working in corrections, like when I went to my interview and all the things when I worked there, all the things. So here we go. All right. So this is what I would suggest. What you wear to an interview pretty much anywhere is important. What you wear to an interview working corrections is extremely important. It says a lot about you, and it's crucial for a lot of reasons. So, okay, this is what I would suggest. Black dress pants, right? Just classic dress pants, not too tight in the butt or front area. And you don't want to be sagging like an inmate. So, you know, they fit really appropriate, right? You look nice. No crazy material, just plain black dress pants. Plain black shoes. I wear like a little heel, and I wore a boot. You couldn't tell it was a boot because of, you know, obviously I had on pants. But wear flats or a very low heel, nothing crazy. I say black all the way around. For your shirt, I would definitely say a blouse. Either this is for women, obviously. I would say a button-down blouse that is not too tight. If you wear buttons, make sure that they are fully closed and they're not popping apart in between. And this is just me. I would say, you know, make sure your shirt is not see-through in any way. Like, your private areas are not popping out, if you know what I mean. Like, you want to look conservative. You want to look professional. So, like, I wore a white blouse. It wasn't a button-down. It was like a, I don't know how to describe it, like a pullover, and then the sleeves at the ends were really wide. And it just looks nice, plain, very conservative, right? Do that. Don't wear any loud colors. Again, so the thing is, when you're going into a place like this, you don't know who you're going to be walking past for your interview. Some jails and prisons, you walk past the inmates. I've been to a couple like that, and some are completely away from the inmates. So you need to look a certain way so you don't draw attention to yourself. And the people who are interviewing you in a correction setting don't want to hire somebody that's going to draw a lot of attention to them with anything, like sexual attention, looking drastic. Like, you need to be there working. So if you're causing an uproar in your presence, it's going to create problems. And, you know, people don't really tell you that. And it's not common sense to not wear perfume to an interview, or not wear, you know, a hot pink color or a purple, you know, geometric shaped shirt. Like, you just low key, everything in there is low key, low, low, low. I don't wear earrings. I always wear a necklace. So that's on. It's very small necklace with very small charms. Again, no perfume, because inmates really, they live in there and they don't have a lot of smells around them. And this is from me working there. They would tell me, they knew when I was there, because they would smell my lotion. And so don't wear scented lotion. Don't wear perfume. This is my professional opinion to any new people coming into the field or anyone curious. This is just what I think. Okay. So makeup should be minimal, no big bright eyeshadow. And if you work there, and I'm not saying this is like to trick them, like this is how you should also be when you work there. Like natural is the way, low, low attention. Obviously not a wallflower, because you do need to command a presence of confidence and nurturing and professionalism in any job. But you also can't be like looking like, you know, you're going to be getting a lot of attention, because it's distracting and sometimes you're not taken seriously and people judge. A lot of people judge, and these are inmates. You know, it's not like you have to say, well, they have to deal with it. Nope, they don't. And they will, you will be embarrassed. You will be called out. You will be sexualized. You will be objectified. You will be threatened. You will be offered dates. You will be everything under the sun. You know, they don't work there. So you just need to just be there, do your job, and that's it. Same thing for your interview. Show up professional. So I got there today, and jail can be kind of like a maze, depending if you live in an urban area, which I do. So jail, when you come for the interview, you know, it is a little bit like a corn maze trying to find what door to enter, where to park. So if anybody's doing that, just expect it. Because I just remember the first jail I worked at, I just was so confused. I'm like, where's the door? They're not obvious doors. And it makes sense because there's things going on and inmates have visitors. Inmates are coming in and out. They don't want the staff entrance and parking, everything to be a big blaring siren. That's what I think, why it's kind of inconspicuous. So just expect that you might have a little trouble finding where to go in. Make sure that you ask, even if they tell you, like today, I still was a little bit confused which actual door to go in. So I would give yourself at least 15 minutes extra for figuring out where to go. And on top of the 15 minutes extra for being early for an interview. So 30 minutes total. If you have extra time, great. Just hang out in your car and, you know, get yourself together, relax for a minute. Okay, next thing about going into a jail. Every jail or prison I've ever been in, you can't bring your person. So when you go in, bring nothing other than, at least for the interview, and then if you get hired, they'll let you know what's allowed on a regular basis if you're employed there. But for your interview, you're going to bring your car key and your driver's license. And if you want to bring a copy of your resume, and that's it, nothing else. No phones, no makeup, no nothing. Don't bring anything. Otherwise, you're going to have to go back out to your car and put it back, just because it's a safety precaution for anybody who goes in the jail, especially for an interview. They don't know you. It's not like you work there already. Okay, so be ready for that. And so today I got there. I found my way to the correct door. I parked in the wrong lot because, again, like nothing is super clear. At least, yeah, no, I would say not just at least for me, it's not clear. So went in parked in the wrong place, but it worked out fine. And I got there early and I got into the interview for myself. I think any job or contracting I've done with any corrections jobs, I think almost every time has been a panel of people. So today was there were four people interviewing me. I hope, you know, you guys are not, try not to be intimidated by that and think of it as being efficient. Like you don't have to go for an interview with the person who, you know, is hiring. And then if they like you, then they call you back next week for a person with, you know, HR, the administrator. And if they like you, then you come back for an interview with your peers. So it's just kind of like a one-stop shop, and try your hardest not to be intimidated. And if you're already not intimidated, good for you. You know, I think for myself, I'm 52, so I'm not really intimidated anymore. I know when I first started, I was so intimidated, like, oh my gosh, four people, like you feel, I don't know, it feels not that good, and you're hoping you know the right answer and all these. Now that I'm older, there isn't a right answer. Be yourself. Say, you know, how you really would do things, because they're going to ask you, you know, how do you handle crisis in a corrections setting? What do you do if you have a difficult inmate? And if you've never worked in corrections, you could, you know, say something like, you know, I've never worked in corrections, but this is my typical approach. But I'm open to learning what is the best approach in this kind of setting. So just be really forthcoming. And it's okay. You know, it's better that they know that you're open to learning, but you do have a foundation and you have an approach, and it's, you're showing that you're open to learning is always good at my age, any age. You know, I didn't hit it yet. In May, it'll be 21 years in the field. Or is it 22? I think it might be 22. I don't know. It's a lot of years. And you build confidence, you know, the longer you do your job and the more, the like different settings and populations that you work in. And I encourage people, like, try not to get stuck in one job forever. Like, do different things so you can, you know, be like, know your craft, just do awesome. Like, for me professionally, I've contracted with the military. I've worked in an emergency room. I've worked in jails, in prisons. I've worked, contracted for a school for a summer. And what else did I do? I feel like I'm missing something. Oh, private practice. And I think that might be it. But those are like a lot of different things. So from those different things, I've learned so many cool things, you guys. The way that our field or the field of psychology functions in these different settings is really awesome. It's so interesting to me, and I've been doing it this many years, and I still love it, and I'm still fascinated by the brain and how people interact with different things, and how people can be raised in, you know, different kinds of backgrounds and come out the way they do, good, bad, or indifferent. It's just fascinating. So, you know, get your resume to look awesome, build it, and build it with the things you're interested in, because, you know, the more unique things that you have, you strengthen your skill set, because you're challenging yourself and you're learning all the time and you're around different people. Like, if you only work in an agency, that's all you know. You've never worked with psychiatrists in a hospital setting. You've never worked with psychiatric nurses in a hospital setting or in a prison or in a jail, which is different. They're all different in different settings, just like we are. So, you know, put in some time. I think everybody should work in a psychiatric inpatient hospital. I feel like it should be part of the curriculum for master's degrees, because that is the only place you can read about it until you're blue in the face. You can watch videos on it until you're purple in the face, but you will never understand it unless it's in front of you and you're working with people who are at the most acute, worst time of their mental illness. And that comes with working psychiatric inpatient only. That is the only place you will get that experience. So when you see bipolar disorder, you know, with psychosis, okay, you might see it in outpatient, you might see it in a private practice, you might see it in the military, but you're never going to see it like you see it when someone comes inpatient and they're at a 10. And when you're around in the hospitals, you're around different levels. So you have people coming in with bipolar psychosis at a level 10 and at a 9 and at an 8 and at a 2 and at a 3, and you see them get back on their meds and change meds and their meds get situated, and then you see them come back. And the same for every disorder. Well, not every, but the, you know, most common, like schizophrenia, delusional disorder, major depression, anxiety, PTSD, substance abuse, Alzheimer's, autism. These are things you see running through the hospital all day, every day, at all different places in their sickness. And then they leave doing hopefully awesome. And watching that process and seeing people at different phases is, I think there's nothing comparable to being a part of that. I did that for 7 years when I first started in the field by accident. I didn't seek that out. Nobody recommended that. I had no idea. It just worked out that way. And I am so grateful for those 7 years because I learned so much from the psychiatrists, from the case managers, to the therapists, to the nurse managers, the psych nurses. Like, you're exposed to so many different treatment modalities and so many different professions and so many different things, all with the same goal. And you come in humble and stay humble, you guys. Stay humble. Learn from people. No matter how long you've been doing this, there's always people who not necessarily know more, but sometimes they do know more. But it's really about just trying different things because people are so complex. You can't have this one-stop shop for every patient or client that you see. You're going to need to try different things. And if you've not been around different things, you're just working from a book, and that's not going to work. I would think it's just not a very good, it's not a good background. You need to be knowledgeable. You know, if you have a private practice and you've never seen schizophrenia, how are you going to know? Unless they're completely out of 10, you might know. If you've never seen it, you wouldn't know. So I really highly recommend anybody work psych inpatient first, if possible. If you're already in it, grab a job in psych inpatient, put in a few years, at least 3 to 4 years, because it takes time to learn everything. Anyways, I don't know how the hell I ended up on that tangent. So So I did the panel interview. It went really well. There was a nurse, there was a psychologist, there was a clinical therapist, and there was someone from the command staff, which would be, you know, some type of a deputy who is an administrator. Okay, so those are 4 different disciplinaries, and it's awesome. Like, just try to, you know, just be yourself, and you're there to share what skills you have, share what you're interested in learning, what you bring, you know, and how you can be an asset to them. And they, you know, told me about the position and what to, you know, what the daily job consists of, which would be doing evaluations/assessments, not formal evaluations, nothing like an agency or private practice. You're not doing a 2-hour long thing. That's not how it is in corrections. So you go through with the guys and women who come into booking. So right after they're arrested, they get booked in, then they have to have some sort of, have the assessment, evaluation, same thing. Then you help the team, which is the command staff and different people that are involved with classifying the inmate, as everyone has, you know, speaks on it, but I'm sure the jail has the final say if they're classified as, you know, mental health, suicide, general population, where are they going? Do they need medical? Okay, so that's part of the job. The other part is that inmates, when they're in jail, which can be, you know, 3 days up to 3 years, it's supposed to be less than 365 days, but it doesn't always work out that way. It's jail is for when an inmate is fighting their case, they're in the court process. And sometimes when they're in that process, they want to talk to a therapist. So we don't do traditional therapy in that setting, you know, where it's like once a week for 50 minutes. It's not like that. You're basically, it's a lot of like solution focused. You're finding out what's going on. What did they need to address? You're addressing it and you're moving on and, you know, documenting. And then you, you know, might need to check in with them, make sure they're good after that, depending what the issue is. So that's another duty. The other one is like when inmates are suicidal. So a high time for suicide, even for people who don't have a history of mental health or don't have, they're not, you know, saying they're suicidal is right after sentencing. So in jail, you know, at the end of their sentence, I mean, their time is when they've been sentenced or they're set free. So if they're sentenced to, say, life in prison or 10 years or whatever, 5 years, and they're going to be going off to the Department of Corrections, that is like the highest time for a suicide. So when they come back, they would, depending on what, not everyone, you guys, nothing in psychology is for everyone every time. Just know a lot of gray. So this is just like a highlight of what it is. So they would go on a suicide watch, which means that they would be in a single cell by themselves with nothing in it, a toilet. They would have a toilet, and I believe there's toilet paper, not 100% if they have to ask for it or not. And then there is, there was what's called a suicide smock. I don't know the formal name for it. I'm sure there is one. And it's like the material, I describe it as like, if you've ever rented like a moving truck or those moving blankets, you know, the horrible material that protects your furniture. It's like, that's what it's made of. So it's not going to rip. It's not going to tear. And then they don't have any clothes on underneath, which I hope we get to a better place in the world where you don't have to be. I find that to be extremely, I don't know about jail, but in general, I think it's really dehumanizing. And people who've been through sexual trauma, I think making them strip naked is like way too far. That's my opinion. But whatever, that's worth not much. So they're in a suicide smock, nothing under, completely naked, and then their bed. And I haven't worked in this setting for so long. I don't even know. Oh, I don't know how I lost it. So they're okay. So they go to a suicide setting. I'm sorry, not a suicide. Okay. If they go on suicide watch, then they are put in a single cell in their suicide smock, naked underneath, and nothing else in the cell. They have a toilet. And the reason is because, so the smock is made of a material similar to, might even be the same material. Like if you're moving and you get the rental truck and you know, those moving blankets, like to cover your furniture, that material, it's not pleasant. And you kind of, they put their arms, their head through the top, their arms are out and the sides, I don't even think that the sides connect. So it's like a big, kind of like a skirt, a dress. And they make them, they use that material so that the people can't cut them up or rip them up or unravel them. You would be amazed by what inmates do with anything and everything, and use that as a device to hang themselves. So that's why they also can't have sheets and blankets and all the other clothes. I don't remember what the deal is with the blankets, how they, God, I don't know. I don't remember. I'm sure they don't freeze all night, but I don't remember. So as, you know, a therapist in the jail, you go around to everyone who's on suicide watch. And it could be from a sentencing. It could be because they're mental health is deteriorating. It could be because they're faking, which is called malingering in jail. Well, it's called that anywhere, but they use that term in jail. They're faking to get out of something, whatever it is. Therapists do rounds, make sure, how are they doing? Do they need to stay on suicide watch or can they step down? And that's done, I believe, everywhere I've worked, it's done every day. So that's part of the job. And oh, if the, you know, if there's any crisis, so if there was a suicide in the jail, a fight, an inmate needs to be extracted and there's like the whole staff is involved and there, you know, it's a bad scene, they have like a crisis situation where, you know, maybe the inmate needs to be restrained for their everyone's safety. And then the therapist comes in and does an assessment It's a brief, and it's just to see kind of where they're at and when they're going to be ready to get out. And always in any corrections facility, the facility has the final say over everyone. So psychiatrists weigh in, nurses weigh in, therapists weigh in, but the jail has the final say. And I believe that's everywhere. So that's the job, you guys. And I would just say, you know, I wanted to share it with you what that was like. Oh, and I did get fingerprinted when I left, which I have never been through that at the job. I mean, at the interview, at the facility, I've never seen that. I loved it. So again, I didn't have to come back for 50 more things if I get it. So did the fingerprinting, you know, got to ask some questions about, you know, how things go there. And it was a great interview. The people were super nice. The jail was very clean and nice. And I mean, nice, you know, I mean, it was actually nice. I didn't go into the actual jail for this position, which I have been on interviews where you're walking past the inmates. So same thing, you guys, if you get a job in a jail or a prison or anything in corrections, my advice to you, and this is based on my experience, and I'll do a podcast on it one day, is inconspicuous. Wear shoes that don't make noise. Wear pants that don't show the lines in your body. You know what I'm saying? Wear tops that don't show other things in your top area. Don't show cleavage. You don't poke the bear. Don't do that. It's not going to work out for anyone. It's just not a good idea. You get like one shot to come in and have a reputation of being a professional, and it starts with your appearance. And even if people don't like that, that's still the way it is, especially in that setting. You don't want inmates, you know, threatening to rape you, date you, all the things. It's going to happen. But so you just want to be this like calming force. You're there to, you know, get the information you need to get them where they need to be, to make sure nobody, you know, whenever you're working, whoever you are, everyone's working as a team to make sure this inmate does not die or hurt anyone else during their stay with you. With the jail, not with you. So that's what I'm saying to you guys. Don't wear perfume. I wouldn't wear earrings, because if you don't ever know what's going to go on in the jail, and I wouldn't want my earrings ripped out of my ears. That's me. Stuff happens. Thank the good Lord. Knock on everything. I've never been a part of anything like that, but it does happen. And it happens all the time. So if you're working, you don't know what's going to go on. So you have to, you know, just be smart, And I hope you guys, if anyone's going into this field, I hope you love it as much as I love it. If you don't love it and you don't feel safe enough, I mean, nobody's going to feel cozy in a jail or a prison. And if you do, that's weird. If you don't feel safe enough to function and do your job, you know, with giving all of your attention, and then don't do it. I mean, and there's nothing wrong with that. If you put me in an eating disorder clinic, I would not want to work there ever, never, ever. I wouldn't be completely uncomfortable, not for my safety, but I don't, that's not for me. So if you feel that way for whatever reason, if it's safety, if you're just like, because if you work in a jail, you guys got, the inmates are going to masturbate to you, in front of you, to other people. It can be very foul. Nobody wants that. The jails don't want it. The prisons don't want it. You know, the staff, nobody encourages it. It is, as far as I know, they do receive disciplinary action for that. But it happens. So some, not that I like it or love it. Nope. I don't think, I would hope nobody really likes that while they're working. But you will be exposed to a lot of things. And so if you don't feel like it's a good match for you, don't do it. That's totally fine. And that goes for anything in our field. You know, if you go work in a hospital and it's too stressful and you're scared, because it's also extremely, you know, anything can happen at any time, and it does a lot. A lot happens in psych inpatient, and people are restrained and shots as far as like in their rump to calm them down. There's just so much going on. It's not for everyone. Make sure, you know, the field is for you, and find your find your place that you love, where you're growing and you feel stimulated, like academically and professionally. And, you know, just keep building your skills and always be humble. Always be humble. All right, you guys, love you. I don't even know what the hell that podcast was. It was about 20 different things, but it was mostly about the interview. So be aware of yourself, know your audience. I have a 7 million mantras and that's one of them. Know your audience. You don't come in dressed in a tweed suit, pencil skirt, spiked heels to work in a jail. Don't do that. Don't do that. You're not an attorney. Don't do that. You know your audience. That's what I would say. Really think about, who am I working with? What makes sense? Ask people that you work with, what do you guys recommend for this? Pay attention to what other people are doing as far as like your field, and ask any questions, especially in corrections. You need to be safe. So don't be afraid, especially if you've never worked in it, ask away. And even if you have worked in it, every jail and prison is different. So ask, you know, it's okay. It's better to be safe and to learn to do what the jail or prison policy requires, so that you're following the rules the right way. All right, guys, I hope that helps. And I hope this was, you know, interesting for the people who aren't going into the field. All right, enough of me rambling. Love you guys. See you at the next one.